This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. A few years ago, I published a novel about the New York City demi-monde in the middle of the 19th century. So when I saw Kate Manning's new novel, My Notorious Life, set in almost the same time and place, I had to read it. The book is absolutely Dickensian. The orphans and street urchins, the secrets of the well-born, the reversals of fortune and amazing plot twists. But it's also grittier and grislier than anything Dickens could have published, because the heroine is a famous abortionist who makes a fortune, a character inspired by a real-life woman. Kate Manning, welcome to Studio 360.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So, as I said, your heroine, Axie Muldoon, is based on an historical figure whom I know a little bit about. Now I feel I know a lot more about. Who is she? Who was she?
Anne Lohman?
Yeah.
She was the wickedest woman in New York, apparently. But when I saw that title, her name, The Wickedest Woman in New York, I had to ask why. And it was because she really, I think, was a foremother of the reproductive rights movement. She sold medicines, some of them quite dangerous, which were known to cause a miscarriage. And by advertising these medicines, I think she really let women know that there was such a thing as family planning.
You imagine her deeply, as I guess maybe there are biographies of her, but I don't know them. And she's, in your book, seems like a more real woman than the references I've read to her in histories.
Well, as far as the real woman goes, I don't think we really know that much about her. And because of the hysterical tone of
right.
the 19th century.
She was just this sensationalist press figure.
Exactly. And everyone, they called her things like hag of misery. And so I looked through trial transcripts and accounts, as many as I could find, and I saw glimmers of kindness. And also, when you're writing a novel, you have the luxury, the freedom to imagine it the way you wanted to. And my thought was that anybody who would put up with arrests and jailing and the things that actual Anne Lohman put up with would have to be motivated by more than money.
I'd read references to her, but I didn't know her real name. I knew of her as her trade name, which was Madame Restel, right?
Right, but she was not French.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I did love plunging back into this time and place, and it is a – in addition to being about reproductive rights, a phrase that didn't exist then, it's a fantastic yarn. But there are probably people who will hear us talking or see this book and go, really? Well, hundreds of pages about abortion? Do I want that?
No. What,
do you worry about that? Have you worried about that?
Truth is, I started writing a story about a scrappy New York City street kid, because this was an era where there were 30,000 homeless kids on the streets of New York.
Especially Irish kids.
Especially Irish kids. And I wanted to play with language, and I wanted to play with that music of Irish and words. And so this was really a story of Axie Muldoon, a young girl who was trying to survive, and she gets swept up in this orphan train movement, which was something I didn't know about. Shipped west with thousands of other kids.
Which people thought was well-intentioned.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So I was very interested in the era. And as I made my way through Axie's story, I wondered what would become of her. And when I stumbled on Madame Restel and I learned that people thought she had faked her own suicide, I thought that would be a wonderful plot device.
You talk about her Irishness and the language you play with, which you do wonderfully throughout this, and the old New York accent, or what you imagine the old New York accent to be, and her kind of Pygmalionization as she rises up through society. Talk to me about how you found her voice, how you decided how she sounds and how that changes.
I've always been a bit of a mimic, and I like the way in New York, you know, how we talk, the D's and the Do's and the Dems and all you guys going to the store, you know, like that. And having spent a lot of time with Irish people, I listened to them talking about the, you know, D's and Do's and Dems and all you's gone to the store, you know. And I imagined an uneducated young girl of Irish descent but learning in the streets of the city. So I sort of began to think that Irish was maybe – or that New York is sort of Irish with all the music mashed out of it.
Right. Can we hear a little bit of Axie? Will you read a little bit from the book?
We sure will.
And what is – where are we?
This is a scene where Axie becomes apprenticed to a midwife. And I will take the liberty of reading this in the Irish New York voice that I've been hearing in my head over the many years I've been working on this
book. Go for it.
Under sun and moon both, Mrs. Evans schooled me about evil and good – and the practicalities of administering all remedies in between. A few drops of opium will save the mother pain. Palpation of the belly will determine a breech presentation. A glassful of spirits will restart a stopped labor. Small hands is a blessing. A steady hand is a blessing. A firm hand is a blessing. A warm heart is, and so is a soft voice. Mrs. Evans had these all, whereas my heart was guarded and my voice was mostly silent. I watched and listened and did what I was told. You will see mothers die of prolapse where the uterus falls right out, Mrs. Evans said. You'll see them die when the child is stuck in the canal. Mothers will die of fever and they will die of hemorrhage. Their parts will rip and tear. They will die just of exhaustion. And remember, she said, till you have a child of your own, no woman will accept you for a midwife alone. I went along to 30 births, 16 boys and 14 girls. The mothers moaned and carried on, but when they were through, most of them smiled and looked down at their raw new infants with wet eyes glinting. It's a beautiful gift of God, Mrs. Evans said, her own eyes crinkled with wonder. And it was a wonder. As disgusting as the blessed event seemed to me at first, I soon was dumbstruck at the power and workings of the female machine and never got tired of the drama and the miracle.
That was Kate Manning reading from her novel, My Notorious Life. Can you come home and read that for me? Because I didn't have that accent in my head as I was reading it.
Sure. I like to read aloud.
It's clear from this book that, like me, you loved discovering and using these old words like poltroon and slumgullion and bungstarter. Where did you find your favorites?
Especially what I especially loved was a small dictionary I found called The Secret Language of Crime, a Rogue's Lexicon. And that was put together by George Matzell, who was the police chief in the city at that time. And he wrote down all the stuff that the bad guys said.
An example?
Like Jack flimped a yak and made off with a spark fawny. I mean, it's so archaic.
And that means?
And it means Jack rolled a rich guy and stole a diamond ring, a spark fawny.
Was there one thing that you learned about the 19th century or the 19th century New York that you hadn't known that surprised you?
Many things. I really found so many parallels to our own times. I felt that many of the issues that we talk about still today seem to have been gelling, and the terms of the debate were set then, particularly when it comes to questions of reproductive rights. I was very interested to see that, of course, we've made so much progress, but that there are still forces that shame and trap women. And I was really surprised by how by some of the similarities, and very grateful for the differences.
Although there was not, to the extent that there is now, such a institutionalized, large and organized anti-abortion movement.
No, there wasn't. And that's, I think, where it began. I think these advertisements that there were many women who, midwives who practiced abortions and sold birth control devices or medicines that would cause miscarriage. But it was by advertising them that both alerted women to the idea that you didn't have to have seven children, which was the birth rate for women at the beginning of the century. By the end of the century, it was maybe less than four.
And of course, they were advertising it suddenly because suddenly there was this proliferation of scandalous, I don't care, I just want to sell papers, newspapers that would take the ads.
Exactly. There was a lot of quack medicine, not just this stuff, advertised, which made, you know, it makes the century very fascinating to those of us who study it because there's so much morality and sin and people making themselves up out of scraps.
Yeah. In addition to now being a novelist, you've had this whole career as a documentary filmmaker for public TV. As you were doing that and winning Emmys, were you, someday I'm going to write a novel, someday I'm going to write a novel? Or was this suddenly, did this just come out of the blue at a certain age?
No, I always wanted to write a novel. I had to make a living. And I liked my job. I loved making documentaries. So I think it's sort of fatal to a novelist to be good at a job, especially a fun job. But I have to say that working as a journalist or working as a documentary producer really teaches you to hang a story on the bones of a fact and to be economical and to get into the scene where you absolutely need to get into it and dispense with unnecessary sidetracks.
And this one took a little more than a decade to come out since the last one. Are you now on a – do you feel like a couple of years I'll have a new one or do you just take longer to let the bread rise?
Well, there's a couple of novels in the drawer that are marinating.
Mm-hmm.
and, you know, I think it's a question of teaching yourself on the job. And I have a bunch of kids that are now grown up, and that will give me a whole vast acreage of new time.
Your youngest just went to college.
And my youngest did.
Yeah, you should have novels out every year now.
I know, and so should you.
Kate Manning, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kate Manning's new novel, My Notorious Life, is out right now.